If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Only the best run here at the Indianapolis 500.
Mario, who do you feel you'll have to beat in this year's race?
People like A.J. Foyt and Bobby Unser, for instance.
Stand by for the checkered flag.
Absolutely incredible. Danny Sullivan spun in front of Mario Andretti.
A.J. has done it. He has won his fourth Indianapolis 500.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store. On 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
Outside the Box Store is where we are because we are inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Good evening to you on this Thursday, getting set and getting ready for the weekend of Grand Prix racing at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, but the conversation tonight, once again, will be about the Indianapolis 500-mile race, the history, the audio, the personalities that make it the greatest race at the greatest sports venue in the world. And again, my name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson is the man that puts all the audio together. Landon Coons is our master architect that helps produce each and every show for us. And Mike, when you talk about the race, and you talk about certainly this year with the 250th birthday of the United States, then we start thinking about 1976 and the bicentennial year, and there were so many special things in the state of Indiana and nationwide about the year 1976, it goes without saying. For example, I don't have to tell people in Indiana about the fact that Indiana was the last unbeaten college basketball team. That happened in the 1976 season, and all of the bicentennial celebrations. But the one big event that took place, I'm not going to say that it wasn't celebrated, but just never really got the chance to put forth its best exhibition, was that 1976 Indianapolis 500-mile race, because it was one that obviously Mother Nature decided that it was going to be abbreviated.
Yeah, that was that stretch of years where it seemed like the rain interrupted several years in a row. I mean, 73, there was an interruption, obviously, and it ended early. And then 74 was nice, and then 75 ended early, 76 ended early. So they had that run of really bad luck several years in a row there in the 70s.
So the 1976 race, just 102 laps, Johnny Rutherford was the pole sitter in that race. And, of course, I think many would tell you that they never really even got the chance to find out exactly how wide open or how their car would be, because it was the clouds that would become wide open. The rain would fall. And here's how it sounded on the Speedway Radio Network when the Indianapolis 500 race was called on account of rain.
We had an announcement here and a lot of screaming, but I didn't pick it up because I was listening to you, Jer. Fred, what do you say?
Well, seriously, I think they're going to bring the car up to Victory Circle here. They're going to put it up on the ramps, and that'll be Johnny Rutherford, a true champion from Fort Worth, Texas. And that's five champions in one. He's got four champion spark plugs in that automobile and one in the seat.
And, of course, for Johnny Rutherford, as you heard there, it would be a second win. He, of course, had won the race in 1974 as well. But just for good measure, let's hear how the television broadcast covered it. Here's ABC Television announcing Johnny Rutherford, the winner of the 1976 500.
This announcement for
being escorted by the press, by the photographers, headed towards Victory Lane with his wife, Betty. What a strange, bizarre finish to the 1976 Indianapolis 500. We'll meet him in Victory Lane in a minute.
And in terms of the A.J. Foyt walking around, not really knowing where he's going, what that means, obviously, though, Mike, is just the incredulous nature for A.J. Foyt, because to this day, there are people that believe that he might have had the car that was going to push Johnny Rutherford in the second half of that race. But, of course, we'll never know.
That's right. I mean, he was truly a man caged by fate. He could have won the race if it went the distance, but we'll never know, as you said, because the rain intervened.
His nickname is Lone Star JR, and he was the biggest star in 1976. Johnny Rutherford on winning that Indianapolis 500.
I was in the car, and they had the cover over it, and we were all strapped in, and they took the covers off and was getting ready for Tony to give the restart engines command, and the rain, the bottom fell out, and it just rained, and it, of course, it had taken 3 hours to get the track ready to run on when it started raining before. And that meant another 3 hours, and it would have been too dark to finish it. And so Betty and I got to be the first driver to walk into victory lane rather than drive in. So that was, you know, the old lady smiled at me on that one. But anyway, that was my second one. And it was, you know, any way you can win them is okay. But still, it would have been good to go on and finish the race and see how it would have turned out.
And, of course, he would come back and win a third race in 1980 would Johnny Rutherford. One of the things, Mike, that is often the case with the Indianapolis 500 is you can look back at a box score and realize that in the moment, something may have been happening that you were not aware would become historic or of note well after the fact. That includes, for those that were listening to the race, in 1976, Sid Collins, who I think clearly, if you listen to this program, you know, was the master of ceremonies of everything having to do with the race, but certainly the most synonymous anchor when it comes to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network. He is the founder of that and will always be, I think, the chief announcer, if you will. But we later would come to know what we didn't know at that time, Mike, and that is that 1976 was the final race broadcast for Sid Collins.
Yeah, that's correct. Sid was ill, and what we didn't know at the end of the 76 broadcast is that when Sid says goodbye, it truly was goodbye, because he would not appear on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network as the chief announcer again. So it was a really, you know, poignant goodbye when you think about it. As you said, in the moment, it's Sid saying goodbye and we'll see him again next year. But unfortunately, we didn't see him again next year.
He would pass in May of 1977 before the running of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. And this is how Sid Collins said farewell on the broadcast for that particular installment of 1976.
And now this final thought for our winner. Enthusiasm with wisdom will carry a man further than any amount of intellect without it. The men who have most powerfully influenced the world have not been so much men of genius as they have been men of strong conviction with an enduring capacity for work, coupled with enthusiasm and determination. Johnny Rutherford showed these qualities today in becoming victorious over the Indianapolis 500. Each year, many of you write asking for the sign-off quote, such as the one I just recited. If you wish a copy, send a self-addressed stamped envelope along with your request to me, care of Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Indianapolis, Indiana. Sid Collins, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Indianapolis. Be sure to include a self-addressed stamped envelope. So until next May, this is Sid Collins, the voice of the 500, wishing you good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are right now. We're here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway at the crossroads of America. Goodbye.
Taking a look back at 1976. Again, not a lot of race highlights to play from that race. It was the pole sitter, Johnny Rutherford, that would be sitting on the pole at the front of the field on lap 102 when the rain would end the race. As we take a look back on the years of the sixes, so to speak, one of the more famous moments in Indianapolis 500-mile race history. As a matter of fact, speaking of rain delays, a race that was delayed by over a week. We'll explain when we come back to Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Now at McDonald's, a McDouble is only $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on or just get lunch for only $2.50. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
One of few drivers to sip something other than the milk, along with the milk, I should say. In victory lane, Bobby Rahal took a sip of Budweiser, the sponsor of his car in the 1986 Indianapolis 500-mile race, the 70th running of the greatest race in the world. Inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center, it happens. Hire Hensley. My name is Jake Query. Mike Thompson here as well as we take a look back at the years that ended in a six. We are looking back tonight at the 1986 Indianapolis 500-mile race. This is a race, Mike, that patience was a virtue. And for those that did not grow up in Indianapolis in that time period, you can imagine the disappointment that any kid has. Imagine if you wake up on Christmas morning and they say, you know what, we decided we're actually going to move it till right after New Year's. That's what it felt like for me and so many others when that first race weekend of 1986 was washed out. And as a result, the race would be pushed to the following Saturday, May the 31st of 1986. That seems inconsequential. Certainly 40 years later, it seems inconsequential and simply a little anecdote. But my dad couldn't make it on that Saturday. And that meant that the tickets that my dad and I would go and use for the race each and every year had to then be farmed out, and my friend Brad Fields and his dad Warren Fields were happy to take them along with me. So I still got to go, just not in the same tradition of sitting with my dad. But nonetheless, there were plenty of people that had to make concessions for that race, Mike, and the race itself even got off, if I'm not mistaken and I'm remembering correctly, to a slow start because of an accident involving Tom Sneva, where that cleanup, they then allowed everybody to go ahead and come back in and top up with fuel, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot of oddities before the race even got underway in 1986.
Yep, that's correct. There was that. And there was also, don't forget, that weird smoke bomb. And there was all that speculation. Well, did the smoke bomb cause Tom Sneva to crash? Which it didn't. It had nothing to do with it at all. But there was some, that speculation for a few minutes. And so, yeah, and it was, don't forget, it was the first year for ABC to be doing the race live. And so they had a lot invested in it, and they wanted to make sure it, you know, came off as good as it could, obviously. So it was a really interesting deal that it got moved around. But the first weekend, there was just no way to do anything. I mean, the infield was such a quagmire that they couldn't have done anything with that.
I have to admit that quagmire is one of my favorite words, by the way, just so you know, right? And this race became kind of a quagmire at the end in terms of how it would relate to the finish and the television broadcast and accentuation of that. We'll get to all of that coming up in a bit. But let's talk about what happened in the race itself. The poll said it was Rick Mears in 1986, and he was certainly in the mix until the very end, but so too a young driver that was coming off of the infamous moment that would sadly kind of define his career from the outside perspective 4 years earlier, talking about Kevin Kogan. But Kevin had his chance at revenge. He had started inside of the front two rows, technically the outside of row number two, but he started in the sixth position and was contending for the race win, largely because of an exciting battle and a lap lead that he took. On laps 187 and 188, he would be battling with Bobby Rahal, and this is how it sounded.
Rahal drops down the side, the inside of Mears down the backstretch. I think he's got him. Larry, can you tell?
Bobby Rahal has done it. He's gotten by Rick Mears. Now he wants to get by Randy Lanier. They're all together in a group. Mears down low. Rahal up high. Coogan goes high. Coogan on the outside of Rick Mears. Tries to go inside. He can't do it.
Unbelievable racing. Kevin Coogan takes second place in the fourth turn. Rick drops back to third. We have a slow car. It's Pancho Carter in turn four.
Absolutely tremendous with just 14 laps to go. Bobby Rahal takes over the lead, but now Kevin Coogan challenges Jerry.
Kevin Coogan makes the low road down inside the yellow line. It is still Rahal, Coogan, now it's Mears, and it's Coogan out in front now.
That's how it sounded back in 1986. Some of the great voices that you hear there, by the way, obviously on the broadcast, where you can hear the voice of Paul Page, you can hear the voice of Bob Jenkins, you can hear the voice of the great Gary Lee, Larry Henry, all of them on the broadcast back in 1986. And it looked like Kevin Coogan. Mike, reality is this. This is a driver that, and you got to give Kevin Coogan a ton of credit, and I think sometimes he's not given enough credit for this. The guy was a heck of a race car driver, and with all of the arrows that came his way in 1982 after that first lap crash and the infamous, you know, it was Coogan from A.J. Foyt, here it was an opportunity where he had the race right there and was contending in the end. I think people forget just how good a race car driver Kevin Coogan was.
Oh, I agree 100%. Kevin Coogan was a very good race car driver, and this was definitely his opportunity for redemption. He was running a really high line kind of all over the place, honestly, in 1986, and that was it was working for him that day. And so, you know, he had basically the race won before a late, I don't even want to call it an accident. Ari Leyendyk spun, and he barely kind of brushed the wall, and they threw the yellow flag, which I understand, and that's what they did. But, you know, it bunched the field up. But Kevin, you know, had that yellow came out, nobody would have caught Kevin Coogan.
And when that happened and that final caution came out, we mentioned it was the first race broadcast that ABC was carrying live flag to flag, as opposed to in a tape delay variation or in terms of updates like in the earlier years. So with that new advent of TV and the Indy 500 and the crowd watching and people all over, why not go ahead and use technology to bring everybody right into the cockpit of the car, so to speak? And that's what happened late in the race, as Kevin Coogan has one last restart to try to win the Indianapolis 500. And the great Sam Posey tried to talk to him just moments before the restart.
Kevin, this is Sam Posey. Your thoughts right now?
I didn't hear you.
Kevin, this is Sam Posey. Your thoughts now with just three laps to go?
Kevin, that's Sam Posey on the radio trying to talk to you. I'm kind of busy right now, Sam. I'll talk to you afterwards.
Fair enough, and good luck to you.
He is indeed rather busy right now. Let's clearly point out that these conversations with the drivers during yellow flag periods only have been cleared in advance with pit crews. You heard the crew member telling Kevin Coogan there that that was Sam Posey trying to talk to him. And, of course, Kevin, quite understandably, would like to focus on the business at hand.
Well, I think it underlines the pressure that he's under. Frankly, I wouldn't have wanted to talk to me either, if you know what I mean, at this point.
Jim Lampley, of course, was the anchor that you heard there explaining things in regards to the ABC broadcast and trying to talk to Kevin Coogan. In 2010, Mike, you had the opportunity to speak to the late, great Robin Miller about that incredibly bizarre incident.
I did. We got a chance to do a show together. It was kind of like a roundtable show with Robin and Steve Shunk and Bob Gates. And we brought that up because we were talking about drivers who had, you know, great chances to win and just didn't to get it done. And Kevin was one of those people who came up, and we talked about that really bizarre incident from 1986.
I'm a little busy now, Sam. That was one of the great lines of all time. Kevin, this is Sam. I'm a little busy now. The thing about that day is Coogan ran this, the Johnny Rutherford high groove and just I mean, he was so fast, and it was his race to win, and he gets beat on a restart.
Was that one of the weirdest things, going back to the Posey thing, that has ever happened, though? I mean, because that really does stand out for so many people. When you bring up 86, people go, oh, Sam Posey, you know, trying to talk to Kogan.
I always ask Foyt, AJ, what would have happened if you, in your era, they'd have had spotters? He said, they'd have talked to my ear one time, and I'd have thrown the guy off the stand. That's it. You ain't talking to me while I'm racing. It was great for Ray Hall and Jim Truman. That was a cool story, but God, Kevin had that race, and he was so impressive when he was leading.
Robin Miller back in 2010, recapping that event. I would be remiss if I didn't mention this, as I try to each time that we have audio, whether it be here or on my daily radio show, from Robin Miller. When I was in college some 30 years ago, Robin Miller wrote a column about an athlete at Indiana University that I knew. I took exception to the writing. I did not know Robin Miller at all, but I called him at the Indianapolis Star to let him know of my, if you will, the exception that I took to his article. And as we were talking, Robin asked me, kid, what's your name? And I told him, and he said, well, son, what do you want to do for a living? And I told him that I wanted to be a sportscaster or, you know, involved in sports media. Indianapolis wasn't necessarily the destination, but that's where I was from, and so I was familiar with the area. And he said, why don't you drive up here tomorrow and meet me at the Indianapolis Star, and we'll see what we can't do to get you started. And a week later, I was hired at the Indianapolis Star. That was my very first job in sports media. That went as well. At that time, I was kind of hanging around WRTV. But that gave me a credibility, having Robin Miller in my corner. And therefore, even though I'm probably the only that cares of that story still to this day, I always try to pass it along just to extend my, again, gratitude to the late, great Robin Miller, who was as loyal and as kind as anybody you will ever meet. And the fact that he called me son until the final day was something with which I always took great pride. I know there was a lot of great pride from Bobby Rahal about the 1986 Indianapolis 500. When it came down to that last shootout, Kevin Kogan, Rick Mears, Bobby Rahal, Bobby Rahal is the only driver in the 109 runnings of the Indianapolis 500-mile race to accomplish the following: to have the fastest lap of the race be turned in on lap 200 by the man that would win the race. Perhaps that's exactly how Bobby Rahal was able to hold off that charge of Kevin Kogan and Rick Mears. The fastest lap of the race was lap 200, turned in by that Budweiser machine of Bobby Rahal. The 1986 finish and the interview with the winner.
And race for two laps. The Indianapolis 500 is now the Indianapolis 5 between Kevin Kogan and Bobby Rahal and Rick Mears.
Oh, and Kevin didn't get the start he might have hoped for.
Rahal's going by him. Bobby Rahal in car number 3 has the lead once again. You look at Debbie. She knows what's happened. They come out of turn 2. They're going down into turn 2 now. Down the back stretch. Rahal trying to stretch the lead over Kogan. Mears trying to get into it.
I think it was a disadvantage for Kevin to be leading because it allowed Rahal to sit back just slightly and time the start. In fact, here comes Rick Mears.
Can't get by him.
This one's for Jim Truman.
Indeed it is.
Oh man, I'm coming, but the car ran beautifully. The crew did a great job. Thank you, Budweiser. There's one thing I can give Jim Truman, it's this.
Most importantly, for those of you that don't know, Jim Truman, Bobby, gave you your first start in auto racing, your first professional start. You've stayed with him all the way through. Did you ever have a doubt that it would be you and Jim Truman in the Indianapolis 500?
No, because he's the highest quality human being, and I knew that my great days would come with him.
Awfully quiet all month. Nobody wrote that much about Bobby Rahal. Were you just sitting pretty, just hanging in there, knowing that you're going to be there?
No. When we started the race, I really didn't know what to expect. But the car ran really well all day. We hardly made a change at all. And I got a good restart there. If it hadn't been for that yellow, I would have been struggling. And
here he is. Here's the moment everyone's waited for. Jim Truman getting the congratulations.
Couldn't have been better.
It's yours.
Couldn't have been better.
Let's get a word with Jim. Jim, the milk, symbolic of victory of the Indianapolis 500. He takes it as his driver did. Congratulations, Jim Truman, Indy 500 champion.
Thank you very much. It was, it looked like when a caution came out, we were dead. He just got a hell of a restart and walked away. And I, best race of his life.
A fantastic race. Unbelievable. Let's go back upstairs.
Very grave possibility exists that Jim Truman won't be here next year. And it's great to see him standing there.
Jim Truman indeed would pass. By the way, Bobby Rahal very shortly after the Indy 500. Bobby Rahal on that last lap, 209.152 miles an hour, the fastest turned in 1986. But back to Jim Truman, the father-in-law, by the way, of Tim Cindric of Penske Racing. But there were a lot of storylines as it was involved in that special relationship, Mike, between Bobby Rahal and Jim Truman.
Well, I can tell you, Jim Truman meant a lot to me. Two things real quick about Jim Truman. One, in 1982, I went to the Michigan 500. And in 1982, I was 12 years old, but I was already 6 foot tall. So I looked a lot older than I actually was. And I snuck into the garage to try to get some autographs after the race was over. And I walked up to Jim Truman, and I thought he was Roger Penske. They look somewhat similar. And I said, "Mr. Penske, you signed my program." And he said, "I'm not Roger Penske, but I am a car owner and I'm from Ohio just like he is, and I'd be happy to sign your program." And he couldn't have been more gracious and warm, and he signed my program, and that really meant a lot to me. So I always rooted for him because he was so nice to me as a kid. Well, then fast forward a few years later, in 2006, I lost my fiance unexpectedly to a very rare heart condition on Christmas Day of 2006. And the first time that I drove to her grave by myself after she passed away, I was obviously apprehensive about it and upset. And as I was driving to her gravesite, I'm driving through the cemetery and passing the headstones. And I stopped and did a double take because there was this large gravestone and it said Truman. And I said, "Wait a minute, Truman." And, you know, it's in Columbus, Ohio. And I said, "Well, I wonder if that's Jim Truman." And I got out and just a few yards away from my fiance's gravesite is Jim Truman's grave. And it was the first time that I kind of felt like everything was going to be okay, you know, because I was like, if my fiance is buried just a few yards away from someone who was as good of a man as Jim Truman, I thought, you know, maybe everything would be okay, you know. So Jim Truman meant a lot to me as a, you know, and still does.
Jim Truman passed away inside of 2 weeks from that audio that you heard. He passed from his battle with cancer on June the 11th of 1986. Jim Truman, one of the great names again and gentlemen to grace the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It is years that end in a six. That means that 1996 is next as we return to Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Now at McDonald's, a sausage McMuffin is only $1.50. So stop dreaming about breakfast sausage and go get it. Get more value on the under $3 menu.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.
Beyond the Bricks with Jake Query and Mike Thompson. Brought to you by Quality Supply and Tool. Think outside the box. Store on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
We are back inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center. It happens. Hire Hensley. Jake Query here along with Mike Thompson. We call it Beyond the Bricks. Landon Coons is just beyond the window here where we are putting everything together inside the Hensley Legal Group Race Command Center, serving as the producer that is piecing together the audio that you are hearing tonight. Audio facilitated, collected, archived by Mike Thompson. I'm simply the guy that has the pleasure of introducing you as we take a look back to all of the different audio to introducing you to different Indianapolis 500s. We are doing years that ended in a six, as does obviously this year in 2026, and we are up to 1996. Mike, the reality, this is a year that we're going to talk about had all kinds of question going into it. The wind of change and a boulder in the stream of open wheel racing in America. But one of the things that was consistent in a year that otherwise really was not was the fact that a guy from Michigan named Scott Brayton was once again fast at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Yeah, and if you didn't know Scott Brayton, anyone who didn't get a chance to meet him, he was a joy, absolute joy to be around. I was lucky enough to talk to him a lot when he was working with Ron Hemmelgarn, who I knew from Toledo. And Scotty was just an absolute joy to be around. And he was so fast. And, you know, he won the pole and then came back and just – 1996 was such a, you know, looking to be a great year for Scott Brayton. It just was so tragic what ended up happening.
Ari Leyendijk was also very fast throughout qualifying, notably. And it looked like Leyendijk probably was going to be the pole sitter. He had unseated Scott Brayton. But Brayton did something that is part of the gamble of what makes Indianapolis, Indianapolis. Polling his time, withdrawing it, and going out and taking another shot at the pole, and it would pay off for Scott Brayton.
Lap number three at 233.809. His average 233.673. He is still fast enough to take the pole away from Ari Leyendijk. What a dramatic turn of events. They withdraw a car safely into the field to take a chance on the pole.
Money, and that one lap might come back to haunt Ari Leyendijk at 231.
Looking for lap number four, 233.851.
He does it.
The four laps at 233.718. He's done it. He's taken the pole away from Ari Leyendijk. What a gamble. He improves the four lap average to 233.718. That is the new
So Scott Brayton would win the pole. As for Leyendijk, an interesting anecdote with that that is somewhat forgotten. Leyendijk would not have actually sat on the pole because his car was disqualified after qualifying took place. And so therefore he had to come back on another weekend, requalify, and become the fastest qualifier. But by qualifying rules, he did not qualify officially on pole day. And so R.A. Leyendijk would not start on pole. That is not to say that he didn't put himself in the record books with his qualifying effort in 1996.
And you won't believe it. Over 236 miles an hour, and it's a new track record.
Halfway through this qualification.
one of the things that jumps out at me in hearing that, there are actually two things. Number one, I love the phrase, "and how," from Tom Carnegie, which is kind of surprising that didn't catch more because it was such a spontaneous reaction to the speeds. But also, it is rare, especially today, that someone increases their speed with each of the four laps of their qualifying run. To me, that's what's the most remarkable about Leyendijk there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's an incredible feat that he was getting faster every single lap. And, you know, what an incredible run from Ari. He had to come back again, as we've talked about, the next day and after getting disqualified, and goes out and just sets the track record that is, you know, still standing to this day. So one of the finest qualifying efforts. And if you watch that video, it's just, it's almost like another world watching that thing, because it's just so fast. He just looks so incredibly smooth doing it. So a great run for Ari.
Ari Leyendijk, once when I asked him, you know, what that was like, was it scary to go that fast? And he said, the only scary thing about it was how good the car felt and knowing that I was limiting my reaction time if it did not feel so good. But it absolutely felt stuck to the track, he once told me. As for Scott Brayton, sadly, you all know it, Scott Brayton would not get the opportunity to start that race from pole. That's because after qualifying was complete in the middle of May, Scott Brayton would be involved in an accident in turn number two that unfortunately would prove to be fatal, and Scott Brayton lost his life. Here's how it was announced on the television broadcast of Scott Brayton's passing.
We take you immediately to Indianapolis Motor Speedway for an update on the condition of the pole sitter, Scott Brayton, who suffered a bad accident about 3.5 to 4 hours ago.
And at this time, we will not be taking further questions. May 17th, 1996, 4 p.m. Race car driver Scott Brayton, 37, of Coldwater, Michigan, died at 12:50 p.m. local time today at Methodist Hospital of Indiana. Brayton's death was due to injuries sustained in an accident, which occurred at 12:17 p.m. today at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway during practice for this year's Indianapolis 500. The Speedway delayed the announcement of Scott's death until family members could be notified. Brayton, who had qualified on the pole for his 15th Indianapolis 500, is survived by his wife Becky, daughter Carly, 2.5, and his parents Lee and Jean. That is all the information we have at this time. Further information and comments from the Speedway, the United States Auto Club, and Scott's Team Menard Racing Team are expected later today. And I wanted to just make the one comment that we appreciate your patience throughout the afternoon. Scott's mother, Jean, arrived at the hospital just a few minutes ago. We'll keep you posted as further developments and information is available.
That was the voice of Bob Walters, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway PR director in 1996, taking the throw at ESPN from Bob Lee. The 1996 race was, of course, a unique one also, not just because of Danny Anguias replacing Scott Brayton, but also the split of open wheel racing. Mike, that hung over, as everybody knew, what was taking place. The new formed Indy Racing League and CART running two different 500-mile races on the same day.
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. 1996 is not my favorite year. I don't like talking about it because I hate that era. And the reason I hate that era was because open wheel tore itself apart. And when I actually went to Michigan for one of the practice days, it started snowing. I mean, it was snowing. I mean, I'm not talking about flurries. I mean, it was snowing coming down. And I said, that's the cue for me to get back in the car and drive back to Toledo. And on race day, instead of going to either Michigan or Indianapolis, I stayed home and I said, you know, to heck with both of you. And it's just, 1996 is just not my favorite year for what happened to Scotty, what happened with the split. And Buddy Lazier is a great guy. I like Buddy Lazier. I think he's a great race car driver, and I'm happy for Buddy Lazier and Ron Hemelgarten that they're Indianapolis 500 winners. But 1996 is not my favorite period of racing history.
Bob Jenkins had to delicately mention the fact that there were two races taking place on the day of the Indy 500.
May 26, 1996. 16th Street and Georgetown Road on the west side of Indianapolis, Indiana. The same real estate that gave birth to the world's greatest race course back in 1909. The same place that has come to host the world's largest single-day sporting event. And the same event that's made names like Foyt, Unser, and Mears famous all over the world. But today, a new era begins at the Indianapolis 500. It's race day in Indianapolis. This year's Indy 500 has a new look to it. The field bringing together 16 veteran drivers and 17 rookies, each hoping to take home this afternoon the most coveted prize in all of motorsports, the BorgWarner Trophy. We've assembled a crew of 13 broadcasters and experts that are ready to describe all the excitement that accompanies this event every year. All the rumors, political haggling, and insults are forgotten right now. It's time to go racing. Time for the greatest spectacle in racing.
Once the race got underway and all of the drama was aside, on an overcast day, it would come down to Buddy Lazier and Davy Jones, essentially. During some of the late cautions, Buddy Lazier kept extending his arm out and stretching his hand. Many thought that he was waving to the crowd, actually, after a broken back that had been suffered earlier in a crash in Phoenix. He was still exercising, trying to get sensation in that right hand. And it did lead to a pretty good shootout. Buddy Lazier and Davy Jones battling to the checkered flag in 1996.
And here we go. Buddy Lazier now accelerates through corner number four. It will be the green and the white flag shown simultaneously. Here's Buddy Lazier, and the flags are waving. We're on the last lap.
Wow, this is what you pay your money for right here. Here's Buddy Lazier. It's about, oh, maybe 30 yards, and there's Davy Jones. They settle it into the short shoot, and Kenny Double's got a good look at it.
Buddy Lazier is in control, smoothly through turn number two. Jones quickly behind, but Lazier in control, heading to three.
A half lap to go. Indeed, it's Buddy Lazier's race to win or lose. And now, about 30, 35, 40 yards. Nothing between first and second as they head to turn four.
Buddy Lazier, the final turn of the day. He has it made. He's just got to keep it between the white lines. Here to call the finish, Bob Jenkins.
The 1996 Indianapolis 500 is won by Buddy Lazier. Davy Jones finishes in second position, crash in four. Big crash in turn four.
Guerrero. A big crash. Roberto Guerrero. We've also got a second car that flipped over as it came down the straightaway coming off of four. Guerrero winds up in the pits.
It's
Sam sideways.
And Hearn.
And it looks like perhaps, well, we'll get a confirmation on exactly who it is, but there's a couple of cars involved. One with a flip and the other coming off of four as we just about had this race completed and the last turn results in a crash coming off of four.
Wow, it was a major crash.
Roberto Guerrero, Alessandro Sampedri, Eliseo Salas are involved in the crash. As for Buddy Lazier, he would talk to Jack Arut.
It's a slow process for Buddy Lazier, and I think we might literally have our first interview with the driver still sitting in the car because it is indeed so painful. Buddy, finally, a win in the Indianapolis 500. When did you begin to dream about this?
Before I can remember. It still feels like a dream. It feels like I'm going to wake up and I need to go to the racetrack to get ready to race.
Well, let's conclude the rest of the dream with the ceremonial crowning of you as you stand up. You can see the pain, but this is happy pain as the BorgWarner Trophy has been placed behind Buddy Lazier and now the winner's wreath. Young man, you join an elite group now as a winner of the Indianapolis 500.
I'm sorry?
Welcome to the Indy 500 Winner's Circle.
It's awesome. Awesome.
It's always awesome to take a look back at the races of the Indianapolis 500, and we thank you for doing it with us. For Mike Thompson and Landon Koons, I'm Jake Query. We thank you for listening to Beyond the Bricks.
If you work with your hands, they don't care how you feel. You're sore, you're tired, and if the tool quits on you, you don't get to. That's the American way. And racing in Indianapolis, that's an American original. And so is Quality Supply and Tool. They're selling what works. They supply men and women who build this nation every day, not just on race day. So yeah, engines go wide open once a year, but if you're like us, you're wide open all the time. Next time you need supplies for a job, go to Quality Supply and Tool. Along with racing in Indianapolis, American originals.
Now with McDonald's, wake up to a $4 breakfast meal deal. Wake up to a sausage McMuffin or sausage biscuit to hash browns and wake up to a hot coffee. Get your $4 breakfast meal deal.
Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher for delivery.